I'll begin this talk with a reading from part of a sutta from the Sutta Nipata. I think we have lots of copies of the Sutta Nipata, so please help yourself after the class. This sutta is known as Embracing the Rod. When embraced, the rod of violence breeds danger and fear. Look at people quarreling, and I will tell of how I experienced dismay, seeing people floundering like fish in small puddles, competing with one another. As I saw this, fear came into me. The world was entirely without substance. All the directions were knocked out of line. Wanting a haven for myself, I saw nothing that wasn't laid claim to. Seeing nothing in the end but competition, I felt discontent. And then I saw an arrow here, so very hard to see, embedded in the heart. Overcome by this arrow, you run in all directions, but simply on pulling it out, you don't run, you don't sink. So the Sutta Nipata is a collection of some of the Buddha's earliest words once he became the Buddha. Of course, in this sutta, he's describing his experience before he became the Buddha, when he was a bodhisattva, somebody striving for awakening like we all are. So he's looking back here at himself as a young man, looking out at the world, as he looked out at the world. He looked out at the world, and what he saw was aversion, anger, violence. Look at people quarreling. The rod of violence breeds danger and fear. And he looked out at the world and he saw people caught in desire and greed and wanting to hold on to what they have and wanting to get what they don't have. Seeing people floundering like fish in small puddles, competing with one another. As I saw this, fear came into me. The world was entirely without substance. The minds of men and women are the minds of men and women, human beings, and they are subject to desire and aversion at the time of the Buddha and today. So we often may look out at the world, probably different ways than the Buddha did. We might do it by turning on the TV or flipping on the internet, but we look out at the world and we see aversion, we see anger, we see violence, we see hatred. We may see that, you know, in the world in terms of the news of the world or the history of the world. We may also see it in our community or even in our house, you know, amongst family and friends, people quarreling. And we look out at the world, we may see greed, wanting to hold on to what we have, that little bit of what we have, and wanting to get what we don't have, as the Buddha describes it, like fish in small puddles, flopping around in these little puddles of water, with this little bit of material and sensual pleasure, gain. We see this out there in the world, people fighting over these very limited resources. Of course, we don't, you know, we could look in the larger world or, you know, the world of New York City or the world of our communities. The Buddha looked out at this world and he felt dismay, discontent. And this is as a young man. He said, I looked out at the world. It was entirely without substance. All the directions were knocked out of line. Wanting a haven for myself, I saw nothing that wasn't laid claim to. Seeing nothing in the end but competition, I felt discontent. So it may very well be how we feel the same way, right? We look at the world and we have this feeling of fear, this feeling of discontent. Everything seems knocked out of line. And then, of course, what the Buddha did was he looked within himself. He looked within himself and he saw the same things within himself that he saw within the world, out there in the world. And then I saw an arrow here, so very hard to see, embedded in the heart. Overcome by this arrow, you run in all directions. So he saw that the things that he saw out in the world, he saw within himself and in his own heart. He saw his own aversion and his own anger and his own desire and his own greed and the way that he wanted the things that he didn't have and didn't want the things that he had. And then he realized that what he needed to do was pull that arrow out of his own heart. That was his job, to pull that arrow out of his own heart. By simply pulling it out, you don't run, you don't sink. So the way out of his suffering was to look at what was inside of himself. To look at what was inside of himself, his own greed, his own aversion. I mean, this is a basic principle of the Dharma. We look inside, it's a practice of looking inside. It's a practice of looking inside. It's not that we're not aware of what's outside, and it's not that we don't acknowledge our discontent, or, you know, I mean, there's a fine line between this idea of discontent or disenchantment with the world and being aggrieved. And once you're aggrieved or once you are thrown out of line, then there's not a whole lot you can do about the world, you know? So our first job is to look at what's inside of ourselves, look at our own desire, look at our own aversion. Then we're in a position of stability and we can do what we need to do, if it's within our own lives or our communities or the larger world. So our tendency, though, is that to look out, right? Our tendency is to look outside. You know, the problem is out there. The problem is out there. That's the problem. That's the problem. What's out there in the world? If it's the broader view of the world, or if it's our own little world of the problem being our job or the people in our lives. But the teaching, the practice asks us to look inside, to see our greed, our stinginess, our wanting, our not wanting to give up these little things that we have that don't really mean that much, you know, our wanting to have things that we don't have. We're asked to look at our aversion. It's to the people in our lives or the way things are in the world. We're asked to look at our own anger and our hatred. And then, of course, we're asked, you know, you can't pull the arrow out of the heart until you see that it's in. You know, so we're in a lot of pain. We look away from the arrow in our heart and we look, that's what he's talking about there. We look outside of ourselves and that's where the problem is. It's hard to look inside and see the arrow in our own heart. This is why we meditate, so that we can have the strength and the equanimity and the tranquility and the sense of ease and well-being and the courage to look at our own pain, to look at the arrow in our own heart. This is why we sit. You know, and in looking more and more so, when we're able to stay within and look within, we are able to look more and more so with wisdom and with compassion. And this is, of course, how we pull the arrow out of our heart. We pull the arrow out of our hearts. And then we can live in the heart. We can't live in the heart when the arrow is in the heart. We pull the arrow out of the heart so that we can live in the heart. So we can live with generosity. So that we can live with love. So that we can live with compassion. Toward ourselves, towards the people who are close to us, and towards that world out there. We live in these qualities because this is all we can do, right? We can train our own hearts to have generosity. We can't really train other people's hearts. We can help them. But ultimately, you know, it's something that they have to do for themselves. We can show them how to do it. So we learn to live in the heart in generosity and love and compassion, and then take actions informed by those qualities. Actions that aren't constricted by our greed and our aversion. Actions that are wholehearted. Generosity, kindness, compassion. Actions that lead to true happiness. See, these are the actions that lead to true happiness. The actions of generosity and kindness and compassion are the actions that lead to true happiness. We don't really know that until we are able to pull that arrow out of our hearts and begin to connect to those qualities and then begin to take those actions. So first you sort of got to take it on the Buddha's word. We use his example. We see that these actions that come from the heart that's free, these actions of generosity and kindness and compassion, are the actions that lead to true happiness. And that what's going on out there in the world, or what's going on within us, you know, those actions through which we seek to find what we sometimes call the happiness of the world, to get the things that we want, to have the material things that we want, or the money that we want, or the security that we want, or the sense pleasures that we want, we've come to understand that those are very limited happinesses and don't really bring us the sort of happiness that's available to us as human beings. But it really all comes in, you know, it all is surrounds and comes from being able to see the heart, see the arrow in our hearts, see the arrow in our hearts. When we're in a lot of pain, we blame everybody else, right? This is why we develop concentration, so we have some ease, some well-being, some space, so we're able to look at the truth of what things are. The truth of what things are. Yeah, I mean, to me, one of the most poignant lines in a very important passage that I read is, "And then I saw an arrow here, so very hard to see, embedded in the heart." So very hard to see. So very hard to see. It's hard for us to see our greediness, our desire, our wanting, our aversion, our anger, our hatred. It's very hard for us to see that. You know, partly because we're always looking at it. We're not looking there. In large part because we're thrown by our suffering. Everything's out of line. You know, we're so confused by our suffering and our pain that we can't see what's true. We can't see what the problem is. It's hard to see clearly when we're in so much pain. That's why we meditate. That's why we meditate, to begin to develop some ease and some equanimity so that we can see things clearly. It's also why it's very hard to meditate too, right? Because who wants to see those things clearly? It's like we always say, once you start to meditate, you know, it's sort of like, you know, you got to know what you're in store for, you know, but it's sort of like once you start to see the truth, it's sort of like there's no going back. Can you really go back after you know what you've seen? This is why we practice, so we see this arrow in our hearts. And part of the reason why it's so hard for us to see it is that, you know, we're just not truthful. You know, we're not inclined to truthfulness. You know, one of the ways that we learn to develop truthfulness is by to abandon lying of any kind. This is why it's so important to abandon any kind of lying, even the most smallest and inconsequential lies. Even the kind of lies, if you want to read more about this, two copies of my book on the table, even the kind of lies around, I'll see you tomorrow at the Dharma class, and then you don't show up. You know? Not being true to your word. So even the most inconsequential lies, it's very important, because that's how we, by lying in that way, that's how we move further and further away from being able to be truthful with ourselves. If we lie to ourselves, if we lie, then we'll always lie to ourselves about our actions. This is a practice of honesty, of being honest with ourselves, about our minds, right? About our minds. You know, I was talking about this on Thursday night, and to me, one of the most important things that I look for in a student is what I call the shift. I mean, I look for it in myself, and it's one of the real turning points in people's practice. And I kind of use the example, just as a broad example, of the person who comes to talk to me and, you know, comes for a few years, and every time they come in is like, you know, my partner's this, and my job sucks, and this is bad, and that's terrible, you know? And then one day they come in and they say, you know, I'm beginning to be mindful of anger. You know, anger is arising within me. You see, that's the shift. That's the shift. There's an arrow in my heart. There's anger. There's aversion. There's stinginess. There's greed. There's desire. We have to be mindful, truthful with ourselves about our minds, about our thinking. I mean, I always talk about just, you know, that very, very seemingly innocuous pattern of thinking that for years I engaged in, walking down the street, you know, 14th Street, every night coming to class and looking at people on the street and having judgments and aversive thoughts about people on cell phones and all these different things, you know. Look at that person, looking out. And then one day it was like, you know, maybe you need to look in and be honest about the aversion in your own heart. It's like, once I did that, it was like, shit, now I can't, I can do it, but I can't get away with it anymore. It's like, you know, the jig is up, you know, because I know the arrow is right here, and that's what I have to be concerned with. That's the problem, not the person on the cell phone. The problem is the arrow in my own heart of aversion. We have to be truthful with ourselves about our actions, or our lack of actions. We may look out at the world and think, boy, things are rotten in the world, but we don't do anything about it. That's a good example of looking at our actions and being really honest. So this is in many ways what the Buddha is talking about, or this sutta, and of course is so important in our practice, to learn to be truthful. Now, of course, it's said that, you know, as we're learning to be able to pay attention to our experience, well, I said, in order to be truthful, you need to have some equanimity. Well, what do I do if I don't have equanimity when I first come to the practice? Because, well, that's where the teacher comes in. You know, the teacher tells you, you know. I find most people don't want to hear that, so it's a very tricky thing. You know, it's said that in the most beneficial or the deepest teacher-student relationship, the teacher can tell the student everything that the teacher understands about the student's mind that's unskillful, that's fraught with aversion and desire, and the student is grateful to hear that. It doesn't, you know, it's like so hard for us, you know, it's like it's easier for us to, you know, pay a therapist $250 for 45 minutes because then we feel like, you know, you're at least getting your money's worth, you know, if somebody tells you that, you know. Ultimately, truthfulness is a skill. It's a skillful quality, and it's a skill. So one of the most important things of the skill is to learn, as we look at what's in our hearts and the arrow in our hearts, is to see when we're judging ourselves. And to learn to be able to put judgment to the side. this is in large part why people don't want to be truthful, is because, and why teachers don't often want to ask that people be truthful and really look at their actions, because the fear is, well, they're going to judge themselves and they're going to feel worse about themselves once they start looking at these things in their mind that aren't so good. But that's not really very compassionate, is it? Because we have to look at those things in our mind that are painful. So how do we do that? Well, first we have to learn to abandon judgment. And then we replace judgment with compassion. We replace judgment with compassion. We see the greediness in our minds, or the aversion in our minds, or our actions that are fraught with greed and aversion. And we look at those mental qualities and those actions with compassion. Truthfulness is rooted in compassion. When we look at that arrow in our hearts, we look at it with compassion, because we see that, you know, that's why that metaphor is a good metaphor, right, of the arrow. We see that we're in pain, we're suffering. This is what the Buddha is concerned with. You know, that mind that is burning with aversion and desire is a mind that's in pain. Those actions that we take that are informed by greediness and desire is a mind that's in pain, is the mind that's moving towards suffering and further away from true happiness. So this is the way we learn to look at the mind and our actions. Is the way my mind is what I'm doing leading to suffering? Leading to suffering. So our inquiry is an inquiry that's rooted in compassion. And we've often heard that phrase, you know, the Buddha was interested in suffering and the end of suffering. Is the way my mind is leading to the end of suffering? Is it leading to true happiness? Is it leading to true happiness? And we may think, well, if I get that, or if we make an effort to get that, I'm going to be happy. Is that really leading to true happiness? We may think, if I give in this way, you know, I'm going to be hurt or afraid. Is that true? Or does giving lead to true happiness? So oftentimes we talk about learning these skills in meditation. Learning these skills in meditation. And one of the most beneficial ways to learn this skill in meditation, and you know, again, what are we talking about? We're talking about the arrow in our hearts. And, you know, we see the manifestation of that arrow in our hearts in our meditation, in our thinking. Particularly the thoughts that, you know, not necessarily always the thoughts of, you know, the sort of restless, delusional thoughts, but, you know, sort of the thoughts that we have in meditation, you know, it's usually those sticky thoughts, you know, those patterns of thoughts about our lives, you know, jobs, relationships, and apartments, or the world, right? So we see those thoughts in meditation, and we begin to recognize that, those thoughts are like an arrow in the heart. And of course, the way that we often talk about framing that perception, that understanding, is just asking, is it useful? Is it useful? Now, that is not a thought about judgment. You know, I mean, the story has been oft told by me about how when I first started teaching this many years ago, those days I used to sit on that side, and you know, I mean, I remember the first time on Sunday night I really talked about this, and people freaked out. You know, it was probably the biggest revolt we ever had in the class. You know, people the next day writing me emails and stuff. We can't ask if this is, because people had always been taught, just to let the thoughts come and go. Let the thoughts come and go. You know, and people were always, and that was always taught because, you know, if we get people to start looking at their thoughts, they're going to judge themselves. So everybody felt like, you're asking me to judge myself. You know, and of course, there's a lot of pain that we have around our judgment. So, you know, we have to learn to ask that question, is it useful? You know, people talk about this all the time. You know, they judge themselves when they ask that question. You know, so you have to learn that skill of being able to ask that question and seeing if there's judgment, put the judgment to the side, and ask that question with compassion. That's a question that is meant to be rooted in compassion. I mean, what is it useful means is this thinking leading to suffering? What are the long-term consequences of this thinking? Is this thinking leading to true happiness? This is the path of true happiness. That's what we're concerned with. Is what we're doing in that small moment in the meditation when we're having that thought about that thing that we want or that thing that we don't want, you know, we're making a decision, we're asking whether or not that thinking is leading to true happiness or not. It all starts right there in the meditation, and if you can learn to do that in the meditation skillfully, you can begin to do it in all the different aspects of our lives and all the different ways that our hearts are afflicted with that arrow. The meditation is a good place to begin. It's where we begin to be honest with ourselves about our minds. You know, ultimately, you have to be honest with yourself about your mind, about your desire and greed and aversion and anger. It's where we begin to be able to be honest with ourselves about our actions. It's where we begin to move towards wisdom. That's the beginning of wisdom. And it's where we begin to move towards compassion. Is this leading me to suffering? This is the wisdom, this is the compassion that will lead us to the end of suffering, that will lead us to true happiness.